Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back. What up, mi gente? What is good? This is Machete Mate back with a current events episode. Instead of current events, it's sort of a forthcoming events type of episode. But we'll get to that in a second. Just want to shout out to the Puerto Rican baseball team again. World Baseball Classic's over. They did us proud. All the Caribbean teams did us proud. I guess congratulations to Japan for beating the U.S. It's one of those bittersweet things that, whatever. But actually, funny story, I should have saved this for like off camera before we actually press record. But like at work, we had this Japanese guy come in and blah, blah, blah. He's shopping around. And then I'm like, oh, you're from Japan. He's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, you know, the World Baseball Classic. Japan just won. Congratulations. And you could see him like the cogs turn like, baseball. Oh, yes, of course. Like the most matter of fact thing. He paid like fucked off as if it's obvious that they fucking won. But anyway, that's over. Now all the Americans can stop crying about the World Baseball Classic being pointless and all this bullshit, even though they're probably going to because they lost. Anyway, I'm sort of rambling here, but I'm Leroy, coming to you from unceded Wurundjeri lands with the entire team here, including T. What's good, my man?
How's it going?
Yeah, doing all right. And of course, the pizza enjoyer, Austin, what's going on?
Doing good. Yeah, I was just going to say, wow, two episodes in a row all together. Who would have ever imagined something like this? Can either of you even remember the last time we were all together two episodes in a row? I sure as shit cannot. So this is a momentous occasion, and I'm very happy to be here with both of you.
Beautiful. 100%. And the feeling is mutual, I suppose. But anyway, how are we doing? Speaking of being together, speaking of this being a rare occurrence, like what's going on? How are we doing? T, how are you doing, man?
Oh, you know, things are all right. I still have my job. There was some issues there. almost lost my job. But that's all settled and done. Some other things going on, some big changes coming down the line for me. So if I don't sound as lively as I usually do, that is why. I'm fine, but you know, things, you know, ebb and flow, as they say. What about you, Leroy?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm just watching freaking Austin eat his fucking pizza right now, and like it's just unprofessional, man. The fans deserve a level of professionalism. That's why they tune in. And a LaCroix as well. What is this? One thing they say about us, we enjoy the professionalism. Anyway, I'm good, man. Like I was telling you off camera, whatever, weather's been kind of up and down, but it's beautiful today. Family's good. Ernie's thriving. He's doing really well in school. He's signing a bit more, which is great. He has some assessments coming up because I think I might have mentioned it. We're trying to get him into a local autism-specific school for his like primary education, and it requires a bunch of assessments. He needs to score at a certain level and blah, blah, blah. He needs like assessments from a psych, from a speech therapist, and all the stuff. So we got that coming up in the next week and a bit. So looking forward to that, but apprehensive because obviously, like, never know, because we obviously want him to be in the right environment, because it's one of those things that if he does too well, he'll be in just a mainstream school where he'll probably get no support. And then if he scores too low, he'll be in a school that he probably won't be receiving enough support. So he needs to be in that sweet spot. But like, again, like it's really hard because that's part of, I guess, being autistic. You don't really, it's not a set thing that's constantly. We might have days where it's like, oh yeah, he's going to do really well. Oh, we don't know. And there's days that like he's going to hit the sweet spot. But in saying that, he's going to score where he scores. We're going to support him 1,000% because he's our son and we love him. And I wouldn't change him for the world because he is who he is. But yeah, that's me. Austin, what's going on, bro?
Okay, so since that was very beautiful and heartwarming sentiment that you left with there. It's going to pain me to do this, but Leroy, I'm about to roast your ass. You know why? You've shit-talked me eating my pizza. My goodness. When I said I was happy to be here, you said, oh, I suppose I am too. Okay, you ready to get roasted, bro? I'm going to fucking roast the shit out of you right now. With love. With love. Oh, my goodness, people. Listen to this. Listen to this. Tell me why. Can people tell me why?
Here we go.
At the beginning of this week, because I'm a good comrade, right? We're all proper Marxists here, right? We believe in criticism and self-criticism, right, Leroy? You believe in criticism, self-criticism. Tell me why at the beginning of this week, right? Leroy, who does such a brilliant job recording our Machete Minutes, right? I tell the homie Leroy, hey, maybe if you slow down a little bit on the recordings, it might sound a little bit better. And my man, every fucking recording this week is a super sad, oh, Austin told me to slow down, or, oh, the patrons, blah, blah, blah. Believe in yourself, buddy. Believe in yourself. Believe it. It's better now that it's slowed down. T, I don't even know if you listen to the fucking minutes. If you did, you'd probably be able to say the same thing. But it's better slowed down now. Believe in yourself, and criticism is a good thing. So that's
exactly. But hold up, hold up. Speaking of criticism, in the one that we dropped last night, this morning, whatever, I actually mentioned that I did some thorough self-crit. I internalized this. I went back to the drawing board, made the necessary adjustments, and I think we're putting out a better product. So I have done crit. Yes.
Exactly. Anyway. Damn it. This is me saying, bro, don't internalize it. I love you. I love you. You're doing fucking great. And believe in yourself. Anyways.
All right. Anyway.
I just had to say speaking that. Hey, I didn't tell you how I was doing. Damn it. Shit.
Oh, sorry. 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 Go ahead. Fuck. Shit.
I'm doing great. Thank you. Go ahead, Leroy.
No, I was just going to say that on that note, it? If you're not listening, yeah, I'm doing fine. All right, cool, man. At least what kind of pizza are you eating, man? Like, what the?
Bro, it's pepperoni. Pepperoni from where? So I literally just got off work. Pull behind the curtain here. I literally just got off work. I haven't had dinner yet, but I love this podcast so much. I'm so committed to this, right? That I have decided to heat up some frozen pizza rather than going and getting real food elsewhere or anything like that, so that I can record this podcast, because it's going to be great. And like I said, I'm happy to be here.
What's the best local pizza spot where you're at?
That depends. I think the easy answer, there's like a thing in Virginia called Benny's that I'm sure you have no fucking idea how to explain to you. But kind of like every like mid-sized city in Virginia has a different variation of a I guess like a local pizza chain called Benny's. Dude, holy shit. They're known for is having gigantic pizza slices. Like one slice itself is like a fucking meal. But no, Benny's is, and the pizza itself, it's flavorful. Like, dude, it's fucking good. Now you're making me hungry. I wish I had some fucking Benny's right now. The fuck?
Yeah. That's dope. We have a place here, not too far from where I'm at. I think it's called Plus 93. I'm not sure. But anyway, all the staff, all the owners, they're actually from Naples, like off the boat, like from Napoli. And it's like delicious, like really chewy, really like pizza oven. Like it's incredible, man. It's incredible. Everything's really fresh.
The only thing I'm going to contribute to this food talk, which I don't know why we're doing food talk, but is I still want to go to Taco Bell. That's that's a little joke.
That's a callback, bro. That's like deep cut.
But fucking Taco Bell, the Australian Taco Bell.
Yeah, I think they've closed because all the ones that I knew of, like I haven't, like they're all something different now. I'm sure there's a couple around, but like I don't really see them anymore. But well, we have Taco Bell now, like back home Taco Bell. But it's too fresh. Like the ingredients of Taco Bell, it's too, like, you know what I mean? It's too good. You know what I mean? Which is kind of loses its appeal.
Right. Because I figure so I see what happened here. So, we had this like down home, the common working man Taco Bell, the common Australian man meal. But then, of course, the big conglomerate comes in with their bullshit-ass business model, and they drove a staple, an institution of Australian life under the ground. I mean, it's sad. It's a story as old as time. We've seen it so many times.
Exactly. So, RIP Tucker William. Anyway, why don't we do this fucking episode instead of talking about like Taco Bell and fucking food and shit? Anyway, like I said at the top, like it's I guess we can class this as the current events, but we're going to be doing a little bit of an election review for two places that, funnily enough, like were sort of the prototype for like U.S. sort of back coups in Latin America. One was a very loud coup, I would say. Another one is sort of quiet, you know, but still brutal nonetheless. So as we mentioned before, Guatemala has a election later this year. Paraguay has an election later this month. We'll get to Guatemala in a second, but we'll kick it off with in Paraguay, like what Austin calls my hobby horse, I think, whatever. I just find it interesting because like it's like the Tibet of like fucking South America. You know what I mean? No one talks about it. It kind of goes under the radar. I would say it was probably the prototypical like ideal situation for like a right-wing dictatorship because like not a peep. Like Weezy said, like real G's move in silence and Paraguay just moved in silence, right? So like I said, they have an election April 30th. In this election, they have 13 candidates running. So it's a slate of 13 candidates, but it really comes down to two candidates, right? We have Santiago Peña of the Colorado Party. Like we've talked at length about the Colorado Party. They're the ubiquitous sort of state within the state of a party in Paraguay. They've effectively run Paraguay for the last 80 years uninterrupted, except for a couple of years from 2009 to about 2012, when our boy Fernando Lugo of Frente Guasu came to power. It's a left-wing guy, former bishop. He actually, you know, renounced his vows to be able to run. But of course, he was a victim of lawfare, and that was kind of one of the first rumblings of lawfare that kind of, you know, precipitated what happened to Lula, what happened to Dilma Rousseff and everybody else in that sort of region. One of the first victims. So yeah, and his main opponent, so Santiago Peña's main opponent is a guy by the name of Efraín Alegre, for a sort of political grouping called Concertación para un Nuevo Paraguay. So like an agreement for a new Paraguay. It's sort of a coalition of like 47, I think it's like 23 parties and two movements. So it runs the gamut from like liberal, what's quote liberal conservatism all the way to like democratic socialists. So Frente Guasu is part of that. They're probably the one of the most left-wing units there. But the main guy, so the guy who's running at the head of the ticket is Efraín Alegre, like I said. He is a member of specifically of the party called Partido Liberal Radical Auténtico. So like the authentic radical liberal party. And this party is very interesting because they formed in the 70s during in the middle of the Stroessner dictatorship, but they sort of existed as a way for Stroessner to kind of give the illusion of democracy. You know what I mean? They were sort of like the institutional opposition party that were allowed to exist to give this sort of air of opposition. Right. And he's the current head of that. And it's, interesting because this party was actually part of Lugo's coalition in 2009 when he ran for president, or 2008 when he ran and won. Now, after the actual coup against Lugo, because it was a parliamentary coup, like we like to call it here, Alegre ran as the head of this party in the election that he lost ultimately to a guy named Horacio Cartes, that if you've paid attention to us before, we've mentioned this, I've mentioned it in a minute. He was elected president then with the Colorado Party. He is now president of the Colorado Party. And it's quite interesting because this guy is a well-known billionaire. He's this, you know, disgustingly rich guy who is, you know, owns banks, like media communication, all this shit. And he's sort of representative of one faction, one of two factions within the Colorado Party. So there's this major split in the party. So you have the current president, who's Mario Abdo Benitez, whose father was like the chief of staff or private secretary of Stroessner, like right-hand man of Frederick Stroessner, to the point that when Stroessner died in Brazil, Mario Abdo Benitez was one of the pallbearers there, right? So Abdo Benitez and his sort of ilk, their sort of position, whether he wants to claim it or not, whether they come out and specifically say it, they're sort of the heirs of Stroessner and the dictatorship. So people look at them as sort of in line with that. So there's still people there who are down with, you know, the good old days, like make Paraguay great again type of thing. But Cartes sort of is the head of this other faction that is more of a, ideologically right-wing, ideologically neoliberal, because it's a lot of the businessmen. Like, this guy's like, again, like, he's like the head of this like banking conglomerate, like this billionaire. Whereas if you know anything about Stroessner, yeah, he was right-wing, but there was no like set like specifically fascist ideology. It was sort of an ideology of non-ideology, basically, like Stroessnerism, like the existence of the dictatorship was like the ideology, right? So we should probably break down exactly. You just write Perón in the chat. It was kind of like that. So we should probably break down who these guys really are, right? So we have Santiago Peña, like I said, who's running for the Colorado Party. He's an economist. He's a former board member of the Central Bank of Paraguay. He's former minister of finance. He used to work for the IMF. So we see what kind of guy he is and sort of the where he lands ideologically, right? He's the guy who's going to actually introduce formally, like, we are a neoliberal country. Whereas right now, even though Paraguay does all this stuff, they still kind of give the illusion of protectionism, like, oh, you know, Paraguay first and all this bullshit, right? And it's funny because he actually ran in the primary to be the head of the ticket in the 2018 election for the Colorado Party that he obviously was beat out by Abdul Benitez. But when he lost that primary, he was actually appointed to the bank, to the board of the Banco of one of the banks run by Cartes. So again, this guy is a hand chosen person of Cartes. And it's funny because this guy was part of that radical liberal party that Efraín Alegre ran like his entire life and switched over to the Colorado Party in 2016. And I think that calls back to something I've said before, that like the Colorado Party, again, being a state within the state, we should probably look at it as almost like the PRI, like I've said before, in Mexico, that like, or even like to a certain degree, like the Baathist Party in Iraq, right? Like, whether you are ideologically attached to what they believe in is sort of relevant, but because they're the prevailing sort of institution in the country, if you want to get anywhere, you have to be a member of that. If you want any political, if you want to get into politics, you want to get into banking, you want to get into anything official, you want to get into that.
They function by patronage versus
pretty much, like,
social basis. It's a patronage and clientelist sort of arrangement.
Yeah, 100%. And on that point, like, Paraguay, I think, has one of the most uneven distributions of land in the world, that like something like 90% of all the land is like held by like 12,000 people, all part of the Colorado Party. And they hold it because basically when Stroessner came to power, he was like sold it off to his friends. So now Paraguay is famous for being like one of the capitals of like smuggling in the world. So like things like contraband, like fucking TVs, cigarettes, like just consumer items in the world, because a lot of these people own the lands on the border. So they were just allowing all this contraband stuff to come in, which is partly why like there wasn't really as much of a outward resistance to the dictatorship, because economically they can get all these luxury consumer items fairly cheap because they were selling them tax-free. You know what I mean? But the other guy in the running, like I said, was Efraín Alegre, who's part of the Liberal Party, who's now the head of Concertación. He's a bit of a mixed bag because his main electoral pitch is focused on anti-corruption. And we've been there before when candidates come out. It was a big one. I read that. I'm like, okay, man. Like one of his big slogans is mafia or homeland. So basically acknowledging that like it's a patronage system that you have to pay to play, or homeland, which is kind of, you know, a bit problematic to say the least. He also has this plan that he's called on plan Living Without Fear, where basically, you know, a sort of a law and order thing where he wants to increase the number of street cameras, increase the number of cops. And if we know anything about Paraguay, is that it was a fucking police state for like 80 years. You know what I mean? That's how Stroessner, you know, was able to consolidate power and keep everything outwardly stable by increasing the number of cops, by bringing in like US cops, like FBI agents, CIA agents to come in and train the fucking cops, right? But like, on the other hand, he's promised to ditch Taiwan. So Paraguay is one of the only countries like in the region that still has strong ties to Taiwan. And he wants to open up Paraguay's like soy and beef industry to China. And again, like I said, like, and I think we've talked about it like maybe like ages ago, how Paraguay is sort of this paradise for like the soy and beef industry. Like if you go to like the areas bordering Brazil, like the Mato Grosso, even the Chaco region, it's all like soybean plantations. It's all like cattle grazing. And they sort of want to open that up to China, because China's the biggest market. And another thing, he wants to actually tap Lugol, because at this point, Lugol's like 125 years old at the moment. Like we talked about the other day that he's not doing so well medically. Like he's still like in the Senate and he's going to run for his Senate seat. But at the moment, like he sort of fills this role of sort of an elder statesman. So if you want to have like sort of your sort of left wing sort of cred, you sort of play nice with Lugol, you include him. And he wants Lugol to sort of help him build relationships with regional presidents, particularly like left wing ones.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to hop in here to say a couple different things. On the note of Lugol, like you're saying here, I think it's important to mention as well, and you did touch upon this earlier. When Lugol was president, he was accepted as like a member of the Pink Tide, so-called Pink, no, I hate that phrase, right? The so-called Pink Tide, et cetera, but he was very consciously and very much recognized as like the moderate wing of the Pink Tide, right? Certainly somebody who was like left-wing, center-left, et cetera, wasn't afraid to embrace Chavez, Lula, et cetera, et cetera. But he was still recognized as like one of the more moderate members or wings of the Pink Tide. His impeachment, as you mentioned, was, from what I can remember, it was the first time I ever even saw the phrase "quote parliamentary coup" enter like the enter the lexicon or whatever. That was like where it was pioneered in when Lugol was impeached. Now it's like this accepted phrase, oh, parliamentary coup, like Castillo parliamentary coup. But this was the first place where it really happened, right? Where a president was impeached over super dubious charges that everybody was like, oh, this was just an excuse to eliminate a political opponent. In fact, if I recall correctly, cables from WikiLeaks, like a couple of years later, even like revealed, like from the U.S. Embassy, right? Revealed like them saying, oh, yeah, fuck it. Let's just get rid of Lugol, like some like real mask off shit. So once again, this was like the beginning of the parliamentary coup. Which I think is important to mention. You know, you talk a little bit about the Senate there as well. I think you yourself, Leroy, said maybe on a minute or when we were talking or whatever, how like the legislature will be key, right? If there's going to be anything to like hope for out of this, any sort of presence for a concertación in the legislature will be key. And the last thing I'll say before I pass back to Leroy is, once again, like you said, concertación, it's like a centrist to center left coalition, right? Yeah. And Efrain Alegre himself is like not on the left of that. So like obviously this would be good and like fuck the Colorados, but like at the same time, like to me, you know how I was talking to earlier today, the homie Matt, and like I think Matt said something really astute, which is like probably the biggest benefit we'd see from an Alegre victory is Paraguay rejoining UNASUR, getting back involved in CELAC, right? The kind of regional integration things. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Leroy.
I think just quickly on that note, that I think, like you're completely right. Like Efrain Alegre is a centrist. He's, again, part of that institutional opposition party, which is, like, everyone knows what it actually is. But a victory for them, I think, will give a bit more legitimacy to the idea of, quote-unquote, the Pink Tide, that if Paraguay... Because we talk about like, you know, like Calle Pau in, you know, Uruguay being right wing or whatever, or Peru, whatever, but like it almost doesn't compare to Paraguay. So if Paraguay can elect even a on paper, ostensibly kind of liberal left, then game's over for like right wing parties. You know what I mean? Because like I said, like the first Nazi party outside of Germany was in Paraguay. Like you know what I mean? Like, the Nazi Party of Paraguay lasted longer than the Nazi Party of Germany. Like, that's how deep the shit's entrenched.
No, 1,000,000%. But I do think it's important to mention that there is reason to believe that it could happen, right? Like, yeah. I think the polling's been tight, right? And there hasn't, I mean, it's Paraguay, right? We haven't received, like, a shitload of polling, right? But, like, the polling's been tight, right? Allegri's in there with a chance. And what the fuck did you say? There's 19 candidates or some shit like that? Not only that,
Yeah, 13.
13. Okay, no, okay, 13. That's still a lot. Not only that, Paraguay, correct me if I'm wrong, Paraguay is one of the very few countries, kind of like the United States, in the Americas, where it's first past the post. There is not 100%. A second round. So 13 fucking candidates, you just need a plurality. So like, yeah. So that opens the door for like the radical, authentic liberals or whatever, which I think it's important to note that I feel like, at least for me, that's one of those party names that like, yeah, it still sounds stupid in Spanish, but it sounds even stupider in English. So like in Spanish, it's like not as ridiculous, but like in English, like radical, authentic liberal, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah. When I first heard radical liberal, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
But yeah, exactly. The fucking High Hopes song started playing in my head. The people, yeah. That's what it is.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, 100%. Nah, but like, again, going back to something you said and based on something that I mentioned, legislature is going to be key, because that's what we're seeing in Peru, right? Like they elected a quote unquote Marxist president, but the entire Congress is right wing and we saw what happened, right? But on that note, like the constituent members of Concertación at the moment, they control 38 seats out of 80 in the Chamber of Deputies. So they don't have the majority. Like Colorado still barely has a majority in the Chamber of Deputies, but Concertación, like constituent members, hold the Senate at the moment. So if the members of Concertación can flip, what is it, like 4 or 5 seats in the Chamber of Deputies and just hold on to the Senate, they'll have the majority, right? But it'll come down to whether how well the actual constituent members of this massive sort of broad front, how well they play ball together, you know what I mean? Because again, it could be they could do well, they could see like, you know, we need to come together, put our differences aside, you know, we'll have disagreements, but like the number one priority is beating the Colorado party. Or if they're going to pull like a Salvador Nasralla in Honduras and just start shitting on the president like immediately.
It just occurred to me a line that a good comrade of ours, of Austin and I's, Douglas, union organizer with the Machinists, he has this line where it's like, the thing about popular fronts is who is popular and who is in the front.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Because on that note, when Lugo won, Fuente Guasu was the leader. Like, it's Fernando Lugo. He was like the leftist was at the head of that sort of broad front. And now you kind of swung to the other side. So like the centrist moderate guys at the front, I'm sure they have their reasons for it, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally. Piggybacking off what you just said, the legislature, I mean, we'll see. This shit looks potentially promising, because a key part of this whole election is, you know, so obviously Abdel Benitez, the incumbent president, is not on the ballot. But he's really fucking unpopular, right? Like, there was a huge protest movement that erupted during his presidency due to, like, COVID and various other things. There's, like, regular strikes right now. Like, I think the National Farm, like, the Workers' Confederation, like, announced a strike. Like, I think that just started today or last week, something like that.
I think so, we did a minute about it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, Abdel Benitez has had a very bad presidency that has resulted in very low approval, some of the lowest or the highest disapproval in the hemisphere. But once again, obviously he's not on the ballot, right? We'll see how the fuck that goes. But once again, I see like potential here, and like you said, this election's only in about a month, so I mean we'll see what happens. But hey, if we get Paraguay, oh my goodness, Leroy, dare I say that anything's possible? Dare I say that anything's possible?
Yeah, and another thing as well is, remember, one of the biggest things that they talked about at the fucking SELAC summit, right? It was about renewable energies. It was about, you know, green, you know, coming together as a region to move, you know, the ball along, right? And one of the big things in Paraguay is the Itaipu hydroelectric dam that they share on the border with Brazil. That I think Lula was down there like not too long ago meeting with Abdel Benitez, right? And it's one of those really weird things that like was positive about the Stroessner dictatorship, because he sort of greenlit it. He's like, yeah, go ahead and do it. And I think it's one of the most successful, one of the highest producing like renewable energy infrastructure projects like in the world or something. And we can imagine how that's going under Abdel Benitez. But if we have someone who's even more open to like renewable energies in the region, that's just going to be incredible.
Don't quote me on this. I think it's the second largest hydroelectric dam in the world. Something like that. It is.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. Which, on that note, something we did cover in the minute as well, which if you're not subscribed to our Patreon, please do it, because you'd be understanding all this context right now. Yeah. There was a protest outside of the Itaipu Dam just a week ago as well, related to lack of compensation to workers that had worked on the dam in the fucking 80s. So, like, that's another thing that, like, hopefully a more left-wing administration could actually help out with. The actual, once again, the bread and butter issues, the situation of workers' rights in Paraguay. But once again, Alegre. I'd say the one thing that is encouraging to me about Alegre, which I guess this is bare minimum shit, right? He's always been very positive toward Fernando Lugo, right? And I know, like you said, Leroy, Lugo's like adopted a statesman role or whatever. But at least from what I see, there's no tension, right? There's no like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, the right wing's taking the reins of this coalition. No, it's brother Lugo. He was the fucking man. We fucking love him. Get out of the hospital soon, buddy. All that shit. So that's encouraging. And once again, the foreign policy, which is, of course, key in this time when we're trying to integrate the fucking continent, the region. Right. Abdo Benitez was one of the fucking first administrations that tripped over itself to recognize Juan Guaido and get those delicious, delicious points with the U.S. embassy. Right. So fuck Abdo Benitez. Fuck the Colorado Party. And hopefully they lose power in a month. But we'll see. I'm not trying to. It'll be a tight one, probably.
Yeah, 100%. And like, one question I want to shoot at y'all to see what you guys think. Like, obviously, we talk about Paraguay being like almost invisible within the greater context of the region. Like, what do you think would be the U.S. attitude towards a, like, not Colorado Party being in power? Like, do you think they'll get the same attention? Like, do you think the U.S. will find them too significant to bother? Or do you think the U.S. is at the point, or I would just say, like, the global north is to the point that, like, any remote challenge, any remote potential challenge to their hegemony is intolerable?
I genuinely don't think they'll give a shit. As long as the contracts get signed and the international agreements are honored and all that, I don't think that it's not the Cold War anymore where anything that even kind of like had the faint hint of communism would get an immediate response from the United States. I think it's different. I genuinely think it's different now. Like if the only time the United States starts getting like angry and wacky is when like they start trying to help people. So if the government you know moves in a center left direction, then there might be interest. But I mean, if it's just like a boring technocratic neoliberal government, they're not gonna give a fuck. Why would they bother?
Yeah kind of echoing some of that there. I think, you know, this was a question that I asked myself a lot, and that I think we talked about on the pod at the time when Petro was getting elected in Colombia, when Castillo was getting elected in Peru, right? A much more like prized assets of like U.S. foreign policy than like Paraguay. No disrespect to our beloved Guarani comrades, right? But I think at the end of the day, for the United States, for let's say the hawkish people in the State Department who are actually paying attention to this, I think for them, they look at Paraguay and say, huh? The center's held before, I think it'll hold again, right? I think they look at this and I feel like they look at that in Peru, right? Same deal in Colombia. They go, okay, you might win for now, but you're not going to do shit. We have people in there that are going to make sure you don't do shit. And we'll just look what happened to fucking Pedro Castillo.
And I think also it just kind of occurred to me that if Paraguay does do a pivot to China, that would get under the skin of the United States government, because, you know, the U.S., the United States government right now has embarked on a complete suicide policy of intentionally, like, of framing Russia and China as both of its as the United States' adversary, has done the geopolitical fucking own goal of driving Russia and China to become friendly with each other, because there was, you know, for generations there was no guarantee that would happen. The Russians and the Chinese were not friendly for decades. Yeah. You know, even before the Sino-Soviet split, they were not friendly countries, right? There was the United States really did have an opportunity to isolate one or the other, but again have decided to own goal themselves by driving the two countries together. Now, if Paraguay does a pivot, if there is a genuine pivot to China, not just rhetorically, but like genuinely, where they, you know, instead, you know, where in times past it would have been American companies and American capital going into projects, and it becomes, you know, Chinese companies and Chinese capital entering into the country, that would be different. That could potentially have a negative effect on Paraguay in the sense of like raising the ire of DC.
No, 100%. And I think we need to keep perspective. At the end of the day, like, Paraguay is still going to be a capitalist neoliberal country. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
This coalition, like Concertación winning, is not going to usher in like socialism. Nothing remotely close. The only thing is that it's going to be, I suppose, more open. Like, they might crack down on a few things. They might impose like some anti-corruption measures, some minor redistribution, but like redistribution in like the US sense, that like it's less of concentration of power at the top. They might liberalize a few things, but at the end of the day, it's going to be a capitalist country. So on that front, I think you're completely right, T. Also, it'll be very interesting to see, again, like you say, like what China actually does if they end up opening more up to China, because they have the entire Chaco region that's quote unquote like a wasteland that's just ripe for development, right? So are they going to have China come in and help them develop it? Are they going to, you know, liberalize that and sell that off? Like, you know, they have their neighbors, you know, Chile right there. What's going to be Boric's response to that? What's going to be Lula? What's going to be Argentina? So it'd be very, very, very interesting. But I think my final takeaways is that obviously I want the Colorado Party to lose, which means that Concertación will win. But it's one of those things that, like, by default, like, this will be the best case scenario for the region, for the country. But it'll be interesting to see. Austin, I don't know if you had any. Yeah.
What we really want is for the People's Army to win. Did I just say that out loud?
Yes.
I might have just said that out loud. Hey, yeah. Take that for what it is. Yeah. Google it, people. Google it.
Yeah. 100%. 1,000%, especially the Guarani population. And again, I'm kind of getting off track, but one of the things I find so fascinating about Paraguay is it's just so fucking weird, man. Like, they have one of the biggest like Mennonite populations in all of like Latin America. Like 95% of population speaks Guarani. Even like the whitest like conquistador looking motherfuckers speak fluent Guarani. Like, you know what I mean? Which is incredible considering that they came of age and grew up during a right-wing dictatorship led by a German guy, essentially. You know what I mean? It's weird. But Austin, if you don't have any more here, we'll just keep the ball rolling. Yeah, cool. So that's that. It remains to be seen what happens in Paraguay, but we'll go up north to the other co-prototype coup country in the region, in Guatemala. So Guatemala also has an election coming soon. Theirs is in June, if I believe. And unlike Paraguay, there is a second round, so that sort of throws in another wrench into the mix. Again, just like Paraguay, there's a bunch of candidates. And the thing is, we keep saying this, but I think we need to get used to the fact that outside the United States, it's very common for there to be like 47,000 candidates on the ballot, right? It's just the way it works everywhere else in the world. Even here in Australia, even though it's a quote-unquote two-party system, there's always people from like the Animal Justice Party, like Austin likes to bring up and shit. But yeah, Austin, why don't you take it away? Because I'm sure you have a wealth of knowledge on this.
The first thing I'd like to say is that, Leroy, when are you going to start the Plant Justice Party? Maybe could have some success there. Who knows?
Oh, you mean the Greens?
Nah, man, the Plant Justice Party, bro. Damn. No, okay, so Guatemala, man. Oh, my goodness. This election is absolutely astounding for so many different reasons. We could go 5 hours deep on this election alone. Guatemala, a little bit of context for people who might not be as familiar. Guatemala is, of course, the historical successor to the Maya civilization, right? Guatemala is a heavily indigenous country. It's one of the countries in the Americas where the self-proclaimed indigenous population falls just short of 50%, right? And that's based on self-identification. So the actual number is higher, right? If anybody knows Latin America. So Guatemala right now is, people also forget, Guatemala, oh my goodness, it is the most populous country in Central America, right? It's got a population of almost 20 million people, right? That's larger than Bolivia, right? Like, this is a country, this is like, people forget how populated Guatemala is. Guatemala is, once again, heavily indigenous, successor to the Mayas, right? I've always, like, for since MAS burst on the scene in Bolivia, right, and really took power, they have caused political reverberations throughout the entire hemisphere when it comes to indigenous politics. And we are really now seeing that begin to take root in fucking Guatemala, which is, I call it the apartheid state of the Americas, right? Guatemala has not had an indigenous president, right? You remember when we had the reports, oh my God, Evo, the first indigenous president elected in Bolivia. Guatemala's still in the period before that, right? So, like, oh my goodness. So what's happening in Guatemala, right? A little bit of context that I'll try and be brief here on, right? People, I'm sure, have some sort of a grasp of what happened in Guatemala in the 20th century, but it's important context here, right? As you touched upon, Leroy, the kind of the coup that happened. So at the in the mid-40s, there was a revolt against the then dictator in Guatemala at the time, Jorge Ubico, right? Classic right-wing dictator kind of guy. Led to what was recognized as Guatemala's first, you know, democratic election, right? Where a man by the name of Juan José Arévalo won. Right. Juan José Arévalo, and this is a white guy, right? These are still white people, right? Juan José Arévalo, as the first democratically elected president of Guatemala, began what would become known as the Guatemalan Revolution, right? This was a 10-year period where Guatemala began to programs of wealth redistribution, right? Where the indigenous majority, I'll say it, majority in Guatemala began to get some recognition, right? Juan José Arévalo was a leftist, right? As the Cold War began to shift into gear, pressure, because this was the 40s going into the 50s, pressure began to get pushed onto Guatemala from the United States. Juan José Arévalo would eventually be succeeded by a name I'm sure you both are familiar with, many are familiar with, Jacobo Arbenz. Jacobo Arbenz would be elected president, right? And it's infamously under Arbenz's administration, where they really start to attempt more deep land reform, that Guatemala is couped in 1954, CIA-backed coup, right? This is an icon. Like, I feel like, well, like, here's the thing, Paraguay's one, but I feel like there's like two iconic Latin America coups that have entered the leftist like ethos worldwide, and that's 1954 Guatemala and 1973 Chile, right? And there's reasons for this, right? In 1954 Guatemala, this is the moment that radicalizes Che, right? Che is in Guatemala during this revolutionary period,
literally.
Exactly, because the quote-unquote Guatemalan Revolution was collecting radicals from across the hemisphere, right? Che was there, saw what happened to Arbenz, and gave up on liberal democracy, right? Justifiably so, one might argue, right? So this is a critically important moment. Like happened in other places where there were coup d'etats against elected social democratic governments, the leftists went underground. Right. A lot of different indigenous groups in Guatemala, the political left in Guatemala went underground. They became guerrillas and began until Colombia passed it. Right. What was the longest civil war in the hemisphere from 1954 until the peace accords in 1996? 50 fucking years. Right. 50 fucking years. This was, once again, this was a period of warfare in Guatemala that was devastating for the population. Most notably, during the, I believe it's the 80s, as Guatemala has underwent a succession of different right-wing military dictators. During the 80s, I believe, the early 80s, is when Efraín Ríos Montt becomes dictator of Guatemala, essentially the de facto president at this time. Boo. And it's under Efraín Ríos Montt that one of the most notorious moments of the Civil War happens, which is various indigenous villages in Guatemala, Ríos Montt and the Guatemalan military essentially exterminated, right? And this is something that would later be classified as, no, this was genocide, right? The reason being, much like in Peru with the Shining Path, much like anywhere in Latin America where there's left-wing guerrillas, right? They established bases among indigenous, they were indigenous peoples in many cases. Yeah. And because that was the case, governments like Efraín Ríos, or dictatorships like Ríos Montt's, would go to villages, say, just kill all the Indios, kill them all. Yeah. They're all communists. Indio, communist, same thing, right? Go ahead, Leroy.
That's exactly what I was going to say, that at a certain point, like, being indigenous was synonymous with being a communist. So, like, U.S.-backed, like, death squads would roll in, and they would talk about, like, you know, we're the communists, and they're like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. We barely speak Spanish. I've never heard of Marx in my life. Oh, but you're indigenous, which means you're a communist. And they would literally wipe out villages. Like, they talk about it, he talks about it in the Jakarta method, where basically it's just villages erased from the map, erased from the map.
Yeah, this Guatemala is talked about a lot in that book, The Jakarta Method, because once again, the 1954 coup was like a textbook moment for like U.S. like black ops in the world or whatever. Anyways, trying to move forward here. So Rios Montt was dictator, right? Commits a genocide. What some people might not realize is that Rios Montt maintained himself as a political figure within Guatemala into the 1990s and into the 2000s. In fact, at the turn of the century, he was literally like president of the Congress of Guatemala. So he was like he remained like a political figure even after the peace accords. And we'll get back to our Efrain Rios Montt here in a moment. But I think it's important to note that one of the key things that was agreed upon in the 1996 peace accords that demobilized the guerrillas. They would form themselves much like other guerrilla groups. They would create a political party, the URNG. Is that how they would pronounce it? The URNG, URNG, right? Some shit like that. I don't think they would say it phonetically. Yeah, anyways, I'm not even going to attempt to.
URNAGA or something?
Some shit like that. The National Revolutionary Unity of Guatemala, something like that. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, the URNG, right? They became a political party. Another notable thing that is agreed upon at the peace accords is the creation of an institution known as the CICIG, which is like an anti-corruption body, right? This is an internet. This is like, I think it's the IACHR, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, that supervises this body, and it's essentially supposed to be like an international bureaucratic institution, making sure that shit doesn't get too wild in Guatemala again, right? Why am I bringing up the CICIG? Well, under the previous Guatemalan presidency, not of Alejandro Yamatei, the incumbent, but of Jimmy Morales, another conservative, because once again, it's been conservatives in the Guatemalan presidency for literally forever, he ended Guatemala's participation with the CICIG, right? Essentially ending Guatemala's, like, a key part of the peace accords, right? Allowing international institutions to see what the fucking the presidency is doing and shit like that, right? Okay, fast forwarding to now. Oh my goodness, because holy shit. You want to talk about Paraguay has layers? Guatemala got some fucking layers, bro. Okay, so there's a couple different frontrunners for this election, right, which is going to be happening in June. One of the key frontrunners is a woman by the name of Thelma Cabrera, right? Thelma Cabrera is the candidate of the MLP, the Movement for the Liberation of the Peoples. And holy shit, when these people burst on the scene, my brain fucking melted. These are people literally talking about plurinationalism, talking about buen vivir, in Guatemala. Holy shit, right? These are people that literally say Mas is our inspiration, right? These are indigenous peasant farmers in Guatemala, right? Led by a strong brown woman, right? Thelma Cabrera ran for president in the previous presidential election and came in, surprised people, came in at 10% in the first round. In that time, the MLP has only further consolidated their bases to where people were thinking they had a serious threat at the presidency this year. Think about that, guys. A plurinationalist movement taking power in Guatemala. That's historic. Like, here's the thing. I know we talked a whole ton of shit when Castillo was running about, oh, the return of the Inca, right? And some of that was flowery language. This would literally be the Maya taking power back. Holy fuck, right? So, once again, go ahead, DL, before I go off again.
Truly a breath of fresh air in Central America, which has just been getting the fucking raw deal for, I don't know, since what, for the last five centuries?
We'll get back on track. But like, remember, like, the Zapatistas are from Chiapas, like right on the border with Guatemala. So like, it'll be interesting, that sort of coalition forming there, whatever. But I don't know. I'll let you get back to it, Austin.
No, yeah. Here's the thing that's sad, though, right? Because Guatemala is a fucked up place, and this is why I mentioned the removal of bodies like the CICIG, right?
She was banned, right? Wasn't she?
Yes. The election authority last month did not... So, not technically banned, she was lawfare, right? In the sense that they did not grant the MLP ballot... They did not grant the MLP ballot access, right? So, yeah. The MLP, because they have... they were, once again, they were polling well. They have a large amount of bases. They've been doing roadblocks. They've been protesting. They've been saying, fuck you guys. We're going to run this campaign anyway, which who the fuck knows how that's going to end up, right? Guatemala, so Guatemala does have a 2-round system, right? There's 2 different rounds. Right now, there's going to be, there are 21 goddamn candidates on the ballot. On the ballot, right? That's not even Thelma included, right? 21 on the ballot. There's a couple different left parties that did make the ballot. Specifically, there's I mentioned the URNG, right? The URNG, the former guerrillas. They're going into coalition with another indigenous party known as WENAC, right? They did make ballot access. Now, there's a little bit of beef right between them and the MLP. The MLP has denounced a strong word, but has distanced themselves from both the WENAC party and the URNG party, saying that they're a bit too co-opted by the system or whatever. And the MLP party has traditionally outperformed those two parties. But I feel like the Guatemalan indigenous left is at a fucking, like, consolidate or get fucked moment, because the front runner is none other than the daughter of Efrain Rios Montt, right? Suri Rios, right? Suri Rios will be running as a member of the Valor Party, the Valor Party, right? That just sounds like some fast shit in and of itself, right? The Valor Party. Suri Rios is the daughter of Efrain Rios Montt. She tried running for president in the last presidential election, but was literally not allowed ballot access because she's the fucking daughter of Efrain Rios Montt. But now, once again, where they've fucked Thelma Cabrera and the MLP, Suri Rios does have ballot access and poses a serious threat to win the presidency. So we are seeing a dynamic in real time of mobilized indigenous bases scaring the shit out of all the white people in Guatemala. And a candidate in response to that, literally, like, I mean, damn. Like, once again, Peru all over again, but with... could have devastating, like, consequence. I mean, who the fuck knows?
Sorry, just quickly, just to rewind. Like, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it was in 2003, 2004, she actually tried to get her dad back on the ballot to become president. And obviously it fell apart because it's fucking, you know, Efrain Rios Montt, right? And also, Suri Rios, if I'm not mistaken, has been married to, like, American congressmen and politicians and shit. So she has, like, a direct line to Washington.
Exactly, bro. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And she could win, man. One of the other front runners that I think we should mention, Sandra Torres, who's running with the National Unity of Hope Party, which is kind of like a social democratic party. They were she's the widow of Alvaro Colom, who was president of Guatemala like 10 years ago. He died this year. He was kind of like a center to center left guy, I guess. But she also has a chance to potentially win here. But my God, like I'm sorry if it's like information overload, but the amount of narrative in this Guatemalan election is mind numbing, right? It's like, who the fuck knows what's going to happen, right? Like, the MLP had a serious chance to win and they've been banned from the ballot, but are saying once again that they're going to campaign any fucking way. I don't know how they position themselves to the WENAC URNG coalition, once again, who do have a candidate on the ballot, Amilcar Pop, because they're going to have to. They're basically going to have to, or else they're fucked and could see Suri Rios become the goddamn president of Guatemala. But I don't know. Like, to me, like, the bottom line here is, once again, this is a historic moment for Guatemala, right? This is one of those things that, like, I try to explain to people, is why it's so important for people in the United States to be paying attention to these sorts of issues. They get away with this shit in quiet, right? If there was just like a letter from like the Congressional Progressive Caucus or the Squad or something publicly saying, wow, an indigenous candidate got banned from the ballot in Guatemala, this is fucked, we need to do something about it, that puts so much pressure on them, right? People fail to realize, like, we know this, right? Gringo worship in Latin America runs fucking deep on everybody, right? And when prominent people in the United States come out and say shit like that, that shit matters, right? That shit fucking matters. But of course, nobody gives a fuck, right? It's just Guatemala. And I, like, it's just, Like with Paraguay, it's one thing, right? Like there's a chance for like a tight election and maybe they'll be able to defeat the Colorados, right? We'll see. But with Guatemala, it's like, oh man, it's all there, but they're getting fucked in broad daylight, right? Like they have for fucking 600 years. So damn, I don't want to end like on a super depressing note, but I don't know what to think about this election at this point.
Nah, 100%. And a few things here. I can already see it now. Once like the election gets tied, or even if Suri Rios wins, I could already see like Time Magazine, New York Times, all those fucking rags girl bossing like, oh, you know, from a troubled past, but you know, we have a female strong leader in Latin America and blah, 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 blah. Right. Talking about like, you know, her dad did a couple of things in, but you know, fresh breath air in the embattled Latin American, like that whole bullshit. You know what I mean?
I'm calling it right now. She becomes president. She's going to become best friends with Bukele. Just watch. Just watch that happen.
Oh, man. I don't even want to think about that.
No, 100%. And I think we should talk about Guatemala as well. And again, one of the things that we always talk about here, it was one of Pedro Castillo's like best slogans, like no más pobre en un país rico, right? Like no more poor people in a rich country. Like there's a reason why a fucking fruit company launched a coup in 1954, right? Like it is one of the most fertile places, not only in Latin America, but in the world. Like all like the term banana republic first emerged from like, you know, what was happening in Guatemala, in Honduras, in Central America, right? Also, they're one of the biggest coffee producers in the world, one of the biggest chocolate producers in the world, one of the biggest producers of you name it. But like how much of that actually goes to the people? How much of that goes to the actual indigenous people on whose land this is being grown? You know what I mean? So it is of vital importance. It is the most important thing that an indigenous led like coalition of people like take back, you know, dare I say, take back their country, take back and like actually come to power, because they'll be the ones to be able to manage this for the people of the country.
And that's the thing, man. These bases that the MLP have assembled, they're not just going to go away, right? Like something that has come true out of everything that happened in Peru. I think I said this on the episode when I came back literally from Peru, something to the effect of, okay, the Congress is going to try to fuck Castillo, but I can tell you right now, if they do it, there will be fucking rebellion in the streets, because they told me themselves that they would do that, right? They looked me in the eyes and said, if they remove our president, we'll go to the fucking streets, right? I remember the night of when I was in Lima at the fucking Peru Libre Party headquarters or whatever the fuck, when you guys might recall or whatever the fuck, when the quick count came out, or no, the exit polls showed Keiko ahead, right? And everybody in the room said, they're stealing it, go to the streets. And everybody went to the fucking streets. Luckily, they didn't get stolen. But like, the same is true here. Like they're doing roadblocks and shit. Like, oh my God. Like, this is why I emphasize the importance of people paying attention to this, man. Like, when people don't pay attention, that's when whole villages get wiped out. Like, for fuck's sake. So, like, oh my God. Guatemala is so important to the region, to the hemisphere, like you guys said, to Central America. And God almighty, the fact that it's literally Rios Montt's daughter that could fucking win. Like, you can't write this shit. And this is where, God damn it, I get so mad at people in the United States. Can you guys name me a single indigenous people that people in the United States have more affinity to or fucking imagination for than the Maya? And yet in U.S. political discourse and consciousness, like the Maya, man, they like knew all these things. Pay attention to what the fuck you're doing now. Pay attention to what the fuck you're doing now. If you love them and think all their shit was so cool, help them now.
Yeah. Fuck. Like, don't disassociate like them having like the most accurate like astronomy in the fucking like history of the universe from like their recognition of their own materialities now, right? Like them being able to calculate like fucking like the orbit of fucking Neptune, like tie that shit to the political realities today. You know what I mean?
I think there's a sense, at least in the United States, that I mean, honestly, I think if you ask an average American, do the Maya still exist? They'll say no. Yeah. Like, I honestly believe that if you ask the average American, or, you know, you've heard of the Mayans, right? If there's any indigenous, there's three kinds of indigenous people that Americans have generally heard of: the Aztec, the Maya, and the Inca, right?
And if the Cherokee. You ask,
right. Well, I mean, I'm talking about like
everybody's half Cherokee. Yeah, I know what you mean.
In Latin America, yeah, in the South, every white person is a descendant of a Cherokee princess. For those of you living in the Northeast, it's like every Italian you know claiming that their uncle was in the mob. It's a similar dynamic. No, for real though, if you asked any of them, are these people still around? They would say no. They don't. They're in the past. They're gone or whatever. They would genuinely probably be surprised to find out that they are all those. That they're still around.
Yo, two things real quick. One, you're absolutely right, and the reason you're absolutely right is because the Rios have been winning. That's why they think they don't exist. Because the white people still rule. Because, like, legally, politically, yeah, they don't exist, right? So, like, that brings me to the second point, which is that's why I think this election should be so easy to be able to reach people in the United States, right? It doesn't take that much explanation, right? The Maya are trying to fucking take their country back. Like, what the fuck? Like, if you love history, if you love all that shit, oh my God, like, this is where, once again, I get more mad specifically. Yeah, you woke the dragon now. This is where I get more mad specifically at the U.S. left, right? This is such an easy thing to be selling people on, right? This is such an easy hill to be dying on, right? This is, you want to get good creds? Hey, I'm standing with the indigenous Maya trying to take their country back. Who the fuck can argue against you? Damn. Instead, oh, God. Anyways, let me shut the fuck up.
No, 100%. And one thing I think of as well, like, with a leftist or at least left-leaning like presidency administration in Guatemala, think of like the relationships that can be built with the leftist government of Honduras, right? Think of it of like the human rights at base level, the human rights improvements of like the caravans. You know what I mean? Because we talk about them coming through the southern U.S. border, but they're coming from Honduras through Guatemala, through Mexico. And we already talked about how problematic, to say the least, AMLO is with that. If we have an indigenous, working class, poor, you know, administration, like, who do you think are the people coming in these quote-unquote caravans, you know?
Dude, that's a great fucking point. We didn't touch upon enough the incumbent president, Alejandro Giammattei, which, yes, you heard that right. He's Italian as fuck, right? The president of Guatemala is literally some fat Italian guy, right? Yeah, POC, person of Calabria, some shit like that. Anyways, boy Albanese. Anyways, so, but that's a great fucking point, right? Giammattei has been a willing collaborator of all the bad shit that's happened to the caravans, right? He said, oh, U.S. Embassy, how the fuck would you like the police to fuck these people up, right? Oh, we'd love to, right? So Giammattei's a piece of shit, just like Abdo Benitez in Paraguay, how we mentioned. Giammattei's become super unpopular, right? He has some of the highest disapproval in the region, so fuck Alejandro Giammattei. It just, once again, it's just, this is one of those moments where fuck, it makes me feel so powerless, right? They're right there. Like, it's just so painful when you see the hard part's over. They've organized the bases. The hard part is over. And they're getting fucked anyway, and nobody's doing shit about it. And it's just like, damn, this is some defeating shit. Jay was right. That's all I'm going to say right there.
100%. We're getting to the hour, so we'll probably wrap it up soon. So on that note, last predictions for both Paraguay and Guatemala, or at least preliminary, because I'm sure we'll talk about it as we get closer. Austin, preliminary predictions for both elections.
So Paraguay's in a month, Guatemala's in like 3 fucking months. So these are early predictions. People, don't fucking quote me. I think Alegre is going to win in Paraguay. I think Concertación is going to pull it off. Dude, I think Suri Rios is going to win in Guatemala. Oh, for fuck's sake. Here's the thing. The only way the indigenous left gets into that runoff is if they consolidate. The MLP has to work out some sort of fucking deal with WENAC, right? And let me be clear. So I mentioned the URNG, right? They're the demobilized guerrillas. They're in coalition with a different indigenous party, WENAC. WENAC are not bad. They're like center left. I think DSA had like connections with them, if I recall correctly. So like, WENAC are not bad, right? Like, but once again, there's been like beef, like stupid shit. If MLP and we can settle their shit and get on board with WENAC and URNG, dude, they have a chance of getting to that second round. And if they get to that second round, anything's fucking possible. But gun to my head right now, it's going to be Suri Rios and Sandra Torres in the second round. And Suri Rios is probably going to fucking win, which, damn, that'll be devastating. I hope I'm wrong, though. How about you, T?
I honestly agree. I'll extend the Guatemala thing, though. I think even if they consolidate, they would lose. But here's the thing. a lot of guys in Latin America lost their first run, right? And they came back stronger the next time around. If they can consolidate, even after a loss, and keep their momentum going, who knows down the line? I think it's very possible that the, you know, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel in Guatemala, but it just might be a little bit further than people hope for. What about you, Leroy?
100% I agree. And just on your point, like, remember, Lula ran like 4 or 5 fucking times before he won. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And he did some self-crit and ended up winning, right? And this is, we have the Lula that we have now. But I have to agree. Like, I think I'm actually more pessimistic in Paraguay because I just think the Colorado Party is so ingrained into the idea of a Paraguay within the minds of Paraguayans. But again, Alegre and the Concertación, they're showing early signs of their ahead, even though it's only 1 or 2%. So hopefully they win. I'm a bit more pessimistic about that. But I have to agree in Guatemala, like, Suri Rios is strong. I think the U.S. is going to, you know, back, you know, their homegirl, their girl boss, whatever there. And I think just to sort of highlight the how satanic this family is, to quote T. When we talk about the death squads and like the annihilation of the Maya in Guatemala, like, a lot of people, I think, are familiar, at least have heard, like, the phrase El Mozote, which is like the, you know what I mean? That's Rios Montt. You know what I mean? So
that's actually El Salvador, but I get the point.
But it happened in that same time, is what I'm saying. Like, it's that sort of period that was backed.
The dirty wars.
It was exactly, and it was the same time that, like, you know, San Oscar was murdered. Rest in peace. That's today in El Salvador as well. But it's all the same, you know, all the same thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Contra Wars, right? Like, there's it's the big three, right? Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, right? In Nicaragua, the revolutionaries won. In El Salvador, the revolutionaries suffered the most brutal violence, right? And in Guatemala, it was the most long-lasting. It was the most long-lasting backlash. But yeah, the indigenous genocide that happened in El Salvador and Guatemala was basically the same policy.
Yeah. But yeah. I guess that's that. I think we're all in agreement that it isn't looking too good. We're a bit more optimistic, I guess, in the aggregate about Paraguay, but it's still going to be quite, quite close. But both fascinating situations, both fascinating countries, both fascinating histories. I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see. And we'll keep you updated. But unless you guys had anything else on that, we'll put a bow on it. So as usual, thanks for tuning in. Hopefully we could sort of illuminate a little bit of what's happening in these two prototypically crude countries, right? Like we like to say, they both were crude around the same time. Very different sort of paths to that. Very sort of different histories of their right-wing dictatorships, but it's still the same shit, right? But with that said, thanks for tuning in. Like Austin said, you know, check out our minutes that I'm endeavoring to do a better job at. I'm trying to slow down. I'm trying to be more deliberate with my delivery. Like I said, I think it's just a gifted kid thing that, like, when you're in third grade, there's expectations. You're just trying to read as fast as you can because that shows intelligence, whatever. And I think I just sort of ingrained that. I think I'm just naturally fast talker as it is, but, you know, I'm working on it, right? I'm working on it. And again, if you're not checking them out, it's because you're not a Combo Oficial. So show some love, show some solidarity at patreon.com/machetemate. You'll get access to the minutes. You get access to our occasional After Dark episodes that we do. You'll also get access to our Discord community. That's a lot of fun. We have, you know, chats about everything and nothing at the same time. It's a lot of fun to hang out with those guys. But yeah, with that said, thanks for tuning in and hasta la victoria.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
Later, y'all.
Mi gente, thank you for listening to this edition of Machete Mate. If you support what we do, consider showing your solidarity at patreon.com/machetemate. You'll be helping us out by allowing us to put out more and better content while also getting access to our Discord community, our more casual and personal After Dark episodes, and any other projects we might have down the road. If not, we still love you, so show us some love with a good rating and review on whatever platform you spend time with us. And as always, hasta la victoria.